Good afternoon. I know we're still finishing up our coffee and desserts, so if I can capture your attention for just a minute, I'd like to make a few general announcements. The reception tonight will begin at 6:15. It will not be as on the original program, the Folk Arts Center Terrace, which is not large enough to accommodate this great crowd, but the reception will be held in rooms D, E, and F at the Williamsburg Lodge. That's a different building from this. If you need transportation, the shuttle bus will leave the Cascades restaurant at 5:50. After the reception, we will be escorted by a fife and drum band to the Tidewater Room in the same building at the lodge for dinner. The bus will return to the Woodlands at approximately 10 o'clock after the meeting is over. We will also be having an open cash bar in here, I think from 10 to 12. Also, one other logistics. The Sunday brunch is also away from this building. It will be at the Kings Mill Resort, and it begins at 10 o'clock. For those of you who need transportation, the bus will leave the Cascades restaurant at 9:30 sharp and return to the Woodlands at approximately 12:15. If you have other airline needs and requirements, then you'll have to work that out on your own. Unfortunately, Jeffrey St. John, one of the world's foremost authorities on the Constitutional Convention, is not able to be with us today. He has been ill, and we pray for his speedy recovery. The endorsement of our own Forrest McDonald of Jeffrey's four-volume Constitutional Journal, published by another one of our own, Jameson Campaign, is a testimony to what you might have heard. According to Forrest, Jeffrey, quote, captures the tension and drama of the convention so thoroughly that I found myself at times eagerly wondering how the story would turn out, even though I've been studying the subject for 40 years, he says. The account is remarkably accurate. Well, you can just imagine Forrest McDonald in tension there as running through those books. That is quite a tribute. For frequent attendees at Philadelphia Society meetings, particularly Saturday luncheons, I must break the news to you that I am no Joe Morris. I know Joe Morris, and I am not he. But since the death of our permanent secretary, Don Lipset, I have been privileged to be the not-so-permanent secretary. It should be made clear that under my administration, there's been no downsizing, no management by objectives, no focus groups, and few changes. The entire administrative staff of the Philadelphia Society has been maintained to a man, or should I say to a woman. In other words, Julie Flick continues at her post in the North Adams National Headquarters, doing the magnificent job she has always done. I'd like to give her a hand. The permanent treasurer, Dave Sturr, was instrumental, along with Jim Heinisch, in persuading Don to hold this regional meeting at Williamsburg. Stan Evans has had a firm grasp and vision of this meeting from the first day that he took office as president. But today I would also like to thank the generosity of Louise Oliver and Jim Heinisch in helping us add the convivial niceties which make this a distinctive meeting. Louise, both by family and interest, has been close to Williamsburg. Descended from the Randolphs, she told me that the Peyton Randolph House here in Williamsburg has a silver coffee pot from her family. It would be easy to minimize the social pleasantries as merely the backdrop for the intellectual exchanges that take place in such an organization as the Philadelphia Society, but that would be a mistake. And Charles Kessler, our speaker today, also knows that would be a mistake. In his introductory essay to Keeping the Tablets, an anthology of conservative writing in the 20th century, he stresses the importance of a rational, humanistic conservatism. He well understands the importance of such institutions as the Philadelphia Society in carrying on the great traditions of the state of Virginia in which we're meeting. Carl Breidenbaugh pointed out in a delightful book, The Seat of Empire, The Political Role of 18th Century Williamsburg, that the Virginia gentlemen, quote, acquired their culture and learning from conversation rather than from books. Although the majority of the planters were a highly sociable folk who had developed conversation and the external graces to a fine art, and who regarded the outdoor life of action as the only good life, the best of these barons of the Tidewater also passed much of their time in reading, end quote. The active and the practical were combined with the scholarly and contemplative. They assembled libraries and learned self-government in their counties and parishes. John Wilson particularly would appreciate the fact that much of it was done in Episcopal vestries where they learned to govern. Now, this meant, however, the taxation without representation was a familiar problem for them because of the existence of state churches and tithes, which they had to administer. And also with respect to the county courts, Breidenbaugh points out that, quote, business and sociability competed with the rendering of justice on such occasions. Sooner or later, virtually every freeholder came to know who the judges were and to have a pretty good idea whom he desired among the gentry to represent him as a burgess at Williamsburg. Now, it is true that the freeholders could be moved by the promise of a good party and spirituous liquors. Maybe Peyton Randolph's coffee pot was used to sober up the voters after a particularly hard election. We could use that coffee pot today, particularly in Louisiana, so. Charles is familiar to most of you here as a professor of government and director of the Henry Salvatore Center at Claremont McKenna College. Having received his BA, MA, and PhD from Harvard University, he's published widely on the American founding. He edited and contributed to Saving the Revolution, the Federalist Papers, and the American founding. Charles, in his introduction to Keeping the Tablets, was remarkably prophetic in understanding the weaknesses of modern conservatism. He pointed out that, to some extent, both traditionalists and libertarians had passed over our own American traditions of Washington, Jefferson, Madison, and yes, Abraham Lincoln. He claims that conservatives have not yet learned the vernacular of American politics, and that the riches and subtleties of the American political tradition have not been exploited. By focusing on electoral success not always achieved, the Republican Party has lost its opportunity to educate the opinions of citizens and thus keep the tablets. The laws and truths of man, nature, and God should be the bedrock of American conservatism. It is these questions of principle which Charles says should form our party. Back in 1988, he prophetically said, quote, every major political realignment involves reopening the question of the meaning of the American Revolution, end quote. What better place and time to hear Charles revisit these insights? If we no longer see the writing on the tablets, perhaps it is not too late to see the handwriting on the wall. Charles?